is Hockey Central with David Amber, Brian Burke, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, 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 welcome in. It's Hockey Central. Today it's Brian Burke, Justin Bourne, David Amber, and welcome to April, finally. March was an absolute mess. Let's hope April is much, much better. We've got a jam-packed 2 hours coming your way. In a matter of moments, Rangers head coach David Quinn will join us. What was a pretty good run for the Rangers, and we'll have to get his thoughts on what was a surprising season for the Blue Shirts down at MSG. As well, Leafs forward Jason Spezza, he's going to jump on with us next hour. As well, Chris Pronger, Hockey Hall of Famer, Stanley Cup winner alongside Brian Burke. And now he is, of course, working in a senior advisor role of hockey ops with the Florida Panthers. We'll get his thoughts. And we're going to continue our deep dives. We're going to be looking at all 31 NHL teams. Today, the beat goes on as we take a deeper look into the Habs and the Senators. So you don't want to miss that. That's all coming up in the next 2 hours. And let's welcome in Brian Burke and Justin Bourne. Gentlemen, how are you guys doing today?
Doing great, thanks.
Yeah, doing good, David. Thank you.
All right, well, safe and sound and getting used to the new norm. And we do have a lot coming up in this show. And we're going to get going with David Quinn in just a matter of moments. And guys, before we welcome in David Quinn, I just want your thoughts on how surprised were you, with what the Rangers did this year? Because remember, it wasn't too long ago that their owner sent out a letter to the fans essentially saying, look, we're rebuilding. Please be patient. You know, actually, it was their GM, Jeff Gorton, who sent it out saying, we're rebuilding, that's going to take some time, and here they are. It looks like they've taken a lot of steps in the right direction based on what we saw this year.
I think they're way out of schedule. I think that letter shocked everyone for its frankness. When the GM says to their most important customers, might be a tough couple of years, folks, we're going to do this right, we're going to do it right now. But then they're back right in the thick of things 18 months later, whatever. It's pretty impressive. And made some good moves in the offseason. Mm-hmm. They've done a lot of things right, but Jeff Gordon's a real quiet leader. He doesn't do a lot of interviews, doesn't want a lot of praise, just likes to win. And hired a coach who, raised some eyebrows. Not that David Quinn isn't a quality coach. Everyone knows that, but not a lot of experience as an NHL head coach. And so that raised eyebrows, but he's been patient. He's taught these guys. They re-signed Kreider. They've done a lot of things right.
I think the biggest thing when you look at any team that overachieves in regards to expectations, it almost always you can say, well, boy, they got goaltending, and the Rangers are no exception. We know they had something of a three-headed monster in their crease this season, and that went a long way for them. That coupled with the success of Panarin out of the gates, how good Zibanejad was, and then not to mention sort of a guy who was a question mark in Tony DeAngelo, him having such an exceptional year for them, to overachieve, you have to find guys that play above and beyond expectations at important positions, and the Rangers are no exception. The biggest thing, I think, being the goaltending.
Yeah, honestly, that's been a big storyline there, what's going to happen with Henrik Lundqvist, and it looks like there's a couple guys chomping at the bit to jump in there and unseat him as the number one goalie. But honestly, the future does look bright for the New York Rangers, and of course they had the luck as well at the draft lottery with Kaapo Kakko, second overall as they moved up in the draft, and wasn't even because of him. I mean, he had moments, but it was really more the Panarin show that stole things. He's been better than we thought. I mean, he signed that incredibly huge contract, guys, 7 years, $81.5 million, so the highest paid winger in the NHL. And a lot of people, myself included, kind of rolled our eyes and said, he's a great player, but they're rebuilding. Why would they invest so much money, $11-plus million a year for a guy at this stage of where they are? But he's that good. I mean, did he deserve some MVP consideration this season? I mean, I think he was right there with the guys in the conversation to win that award.
Well, I think he's in the conversation. I don't think he can win it. I think there's been too many better performances. And that's a problem when you're a winger. Usually those awards often go to centers because they get more points, or defensemen because it's acknowledged to be a harder position to play. And wing is the easiest position to play, and just racking up goals often isn't enough to get a major award like that. But if you look at what they've done, it's a series of things. The goaltending has emerged, as Justin points out. The Trouba trade was a good trade for them. It was an upgrade. Pionk's a good player, but a different kind of player. Panarin signing. They've done lots of really, you know, D'Angelo's really emerged as a player. They've done lots of incremental steps that have resulted in them being right back in the hunt.
And Panarin, I was going to say Panarin, when the season went on pause, third in the league behind only Draisaitl and McDavid in points. It kind of reminded me a little bit of what Taylor Hall was able to do a few years ago in New Jersey, where he literally was dragging a team up the standings by his performance. So a few weapons at the arsenal for David Quinn, who did an exceptional job so far this season with the New York Rangers. And let's welcome in David Quinn, who joins us now here on Hockey Central with Brian Burke and Justin Bourne and David Amber. David, thanks so much for doing this. And before we get to all the hockey questions, I do want to just find out, you know, based on the situation we're sitting in, how are you? How is your family right now?
We're doing well. It's, you know, obviously it's been a tough time for everybody worldwide, not just the people in New York, but obviously New York's been hit the hardest. But, you know, we were in Colorado when this all happened, and we're supposed to fly to Arizona the next day, but obviously we got rerouted back here to New York, and we landed out in Westchester, and I've been holed up here in Westchester ever since we landed on, I think it was the 12th of March. So obviously a difficult time worldwide, and but it's just amazing to watch how the world and Americans in general and Canadians join together to unite and fight something this serious.
Before Berkey gets to some hockey questions, we obviously want to talk to you about the exceptional season put forward by the Rangers. You talked about being in Westchester in New York, and we're all sitting there watching the news, and we know that's the epicenter of everything going on right now. Can you just give us a little description of what it's like there to be in, you know, really the epicenter of where this pandemic's hit hardest in North America? What's that been like?
Yeah, it's scary once the whole thing went down and you see the impact it had throughout our city. And, you know, I think over half the cases in America right here in New York. And, you know, it spread pretty quickly in the state, in particular in the city. And, you know, but like I said, just to watch the way the state and the city responded and how people unified and how people did everything they could to help each other, I think it's really minimized the death toll, and it's certainly not minimizing the people that have passed. But, you know, this thing could be a lot worse if people hadn't bonded together and united and done everything they could to slow this thing down. And but it has been an eerie feeling throughout the state of New York, in particular the city. I've only been to the city once to swing by my apartment to pick something up, but I mean, it's really a ghost town, and it's unlike anything you've seen in the city of New York.
Berkey?
Yeah. Hey, David, how are you?
Berkey, how are you?
I'm good. So we've been asking the coaches to come on, and we're not going to beat this to death, but we want to track your path to the NHL as a coach. We found it interesting. We talked to Torts. His first head coaching job in pro was coaching Virginia in the Atlantic Coast League. Talked to Sully, talked to guys. Guys have followed different paths. Now, you were a high draft pick yourself, but you started 5 years as an associate coach at BU, right?
My first coaching job was actually in
Alaska, right? Northeastern.
Yeah. Ben Smith, you know, who actually recruited me to go to BU, and I remained a very we had a great friendship and still do to this day. You know, after I had to stop playing, he was somebody I really leaned on, and it was really one of the reasons I got into coaching. After, you know, when you're diagnosed with hemophilia at the age of 20 and your career stops, you know, you're kind of looking for support, and not only did my family give me an abundance of support, but my coaches were people that I really leaned on, you know, whether it be Ben Smith or Jack Parker or Larry Piatelli, my coach at Kent.
Let me interrupt you, David. Tell people, I didn't know if you wanted to talk about your illness or not. Tell people why your playing career ended.
Yeah, I was, it's funny, you know, during my time at Kent, I started getting hurt a lot, and, you know, I played football, played hockey, baseball, and you know, as my junior year started progressing, I was starting to get a lot of injuries, and most of them were bruising. You know, a game would end, and, you know, all of a sudden I'd have some swelling, whether it be in my ankle or my thigh or my arm. And, you know, I just thought, hey, I'm playing football, I'm playing hockey, these things happen. Then I got to my senior at Kent, and for some reason I was getting hurt more often than ever. And, you know, one of the things that when I was younger, I was bigger than everybody. You know, when I got to Kent as a 15-year-old, I was 6 feet, 215 pounds. So, you know, when you're playing against smaller people, maybe you're not putting yourself in harm's way as often as you would be when you're playing against bigger people. But, you know, my situation really got magnified when I got to BU. And, you know, I missed half my freshman year. I had a bleeding into my leg that required emergency surgery, missed half the season. My sophomore year at BU, I was relatively healthy. I only missed two games. But, Still, I was having a lot of issues, a lot of injuries, and I'll never forget this. We had won the Hockey East Championship, and Dr. Leach came up to me in the locker room after the game, and I had missed the first two games of the playoffs, the only two games I missed that year. I had bleeding into my thigh, and, you know, I had trouble walking and whatnot, so I couldn't really skate, so they held me out for the two games, and we ended up winning the Hockey East Championship. And I'll never forget Dr. Leach saying to me, in the midst of the celebration in the locker room, you know, I want you to get your blood checked. He said, every injury you've had has been blood-related. Our season ended. We got knocked out of the national tournament by Minnesota and Minnesota Gophers. And then the next day, the North Stars called me and wanted to sign me. But back then, you couldn't sign an NHL contract and play in the Olympics. And I really wanted to play in the 88 Olympics. But still, there was some decision to make. But the next day, I went and got my blood checked. I went to a hematologist. I didn't even know what a hematologist was. I went to the hematologist. 2 days later, I go to sit down with Jack Parker to talk about, you know, what I was going to do, whether I was going to sign or whether I was going to stay at BU, and I was probably going to stay. When I walked in, the team doctor was there. And when I walked in, he said that my blood test came back and I was a hemophiliac, which is a blood clotting disorder, meaning when, you know, if you and I get hit with the same amount of force, I would bleed a lot longer internally than you would. Your bruise would be very minimal, where mine would be a lot more exasperated and exaggerated. So, you know, they were shocked that I was able to play hockey even through, you know, through the age of 20. I had had it my whole life. I was born with it. And my career ended then. And, you know, I was able to play a couple of years, but, you know, I had some major surgery. I lost some movement on my right foot. And so really, that was really the end of it for me. And, you know, like I said, I mean, coaching was something that I always had an eye on, especially after that had happened to me. And, because I just knew the impact that my coaches has had on me and allowing me to fight through a very, very difficult time. And I thought to myself, what a great opportunity where if I could ever get into coaching and hopefully someday have that type of impact and help a player along the way my coaches did for me. And, you know, I can't thank Ben Smith enough for giving me that first opportunity at Northeastern.
So I saw you play your draft year. I wanted to see you play at Milton Academy. Remember how cold that rink was?
Every prep school rink was cold, but that was right.
they could have hung meat up on the side of the walls there. So you go to Northeastern with Ben, then you go to Omaha, Nebraska, University of Omaha, Nebraska.
Yep.
And then you come back to BU, associate head coach with Jackie?
No, and then I got my first head coaching job was with the U.S. National Program. I coached the under-17 team. So I left Nebraska, Omaha. I was there for 6 years. It was an incredible opportunity to start a program. When I left Northeastern, Ben actually became the 98 Women's Olympic coach. So he was leaving Northeastern, and then Mike Kemp had got the job at Nebraska-Omaha. They were just starting their Division I program. Mike, I was actually coaching the 15 festival up in Lake Placid, and Dave Peterson, the Olympic coach for the 88 and 92 U.S. team, was a good friend of mine, and Mike Kemp had just got the job. The night before, Mike walks into the rink and says to Dave Pearson, I just got the Nebraska-Omaha job. He said, oh, congratulations. He said, now I got to find an assistant coach. And I was on the bench coaching the game they were watching, and Dave Pearson turned to Mike Kemp and said, well, there's your assistant coach right there. So that worked out. I moved to Omaha, Nebraska, which I never thought I would do, but it was an incredible time and great six great years. You know, to build a program was a really unique challenge, and it really established, for me anyway, a lot of recruiting bases and a lot of recruiting contacts in the hockey world. And just really, to go out west, you know, being a, you know, Boston, Rhode Island guy and going out west was the best move for me because it certainly opened up a ton of doors. And then I became the head coach for the under-17 team up in Ann Arbor, the U.S. National Program for 2 years. And then I went to Jack to BU to be the associate head coach at BU.
Okay, we're there 5 years. And then again, we'll get through this quickly here because I know some people are fascinated by it. I am. But we want to talk about your Rangers, too. So then sidestep to Cleveland. You go to Cleveland for 2 years.
Yeah, we had just won the national championship in 2009. Yeah, we just won the national championship in 2009. And, I was 43 at the time, and Jack was 67, 68. I remember when Jack hired me, he said, 3 or 5 more years, that's it. I'm only going to coach you. And if you do the job I think you're going to do, you'll replace me here at BU. Well, that was the fifth year, and we had just won the national title. And I remember me talking to Jack after, and I knew he wasn't going anywhere. And we had three Colorado draft picks on our team. We had Kevin Shattenkirk, Colby Cohen, Brandon Yip, actually, and Karen Millan. We had four. So I had got to know Craig Billington very well. He was the director of player development for the Avalanche. And about 4 days after I talked to Jack, I get a phone call from Craig Billington saying, Joe Sacco is going to be named the head coach of the Avalanche tomorrow. We want to name you the head coach in Lake Erie. And we want an answer in 24 hours. That's how fast it happened. And, you know, I just thought to myself, you know, 43 years old, what an incredible opportunity to be a head coach in the American Hockey League. The hard part was I was taking a big pay cut. I was taking a 50% pay cut leaving BU going to the American League. But I thought to myself, it was, you know, I was going to find out whether I could coach or not. That, to me, I thought, you know, you got to take chances on yourself. You got to invest in yourself. And, you know, I became the head coach in the American League, and it was the best move I ever made.
And we've asked a few guys, what did you make in Cleveland all those years ago?
I made $100,000 in Cleveland my first year.
That's a big pay cut from associate coach at BU for sure.
Yeah, I was, well, you know, 43. It's not like I was 28, 35 years old where I could maybe, you know, I made 160 that last year at BU, and I was taking a $60,000 pay cut, which was, like I said, it was a big investment. But I thought, you know, if I go and do the job I think I can do, I'll either prove I can coach or not. It'll open up a lot of doors. And, I actually did a seminar for the NHL Coaches Association this February, and that's one of the things I said is to young coaches, don't be afraid to invest in yourself.
Well, so then you go back 5 years, head coach at BU, have a lot of success. Talk about the philosophy of the 1 and 2 year players that BU seems to get, these top picks that are there for just 1 or 2 years. Different psychology, isn't it?
It sure is. It really is it's a balancing act, and you've got to, you know, when I first got there, I thought, let's go get all the best players and all the, and, you know, all of a sudden you win draft day. I jokingly used to say, you know, winning draft day as a college coach isn't necessarily the best thing for your program because, you know, these guys aren't going to stay very long. But, you know, one of the things I think that you need to do is you need to have great communication with the NHL team. They need to feel comfortable keeping their players there, knowing they're going to get better. I know a lot of coaches sometimes get a little protective of their players, but I just don't buy that approach. I think that, you know, when an organization drafts a player, they want him to be the best player that he can be. And when I was at BU, we wanted him to be the best player he can be. And if you can work together and you have the best interest of the player at heart, the player's going to get better quicker, and we're all going to get what we want out of it. But that being said, you got to be careful because you need seniors to be successful in college hockey. And one of the things that we faced in my 5 years at BU, we never had a lot of seniors. And, you know, we were always right there. We were always, you know, I mean, I think 3 out of 5 years we went to the Elite Eight. 1 year we went to the national championship game. And I know you were happy with that outcome, Berkey, when your Friars beat us in the finals.
I love that game.
But it really is a balancing act. But, you know, I just it's such a great challenge, and it's really good for your program when you get the, you know, the Eichels, the McAvoys, the Kellers, the Greenways, you know, the Fabros. And, you know, when I was the assistant, we had Shattenkirk and Wilson and Bonino and guys like the Gilroy, guys like that. You know, it really puts your program at center stage in the hockey world.
And we've seen a new trend here, David. The fifth coach to go from the NCAA to the NHL. So it's becoming a bit of a more regular leap for coaches to make that jump. And you're showing the success of the NHL, I'm sure, blazing a trail for guys in the future to jump in as well to do the same thing that you did. Justin, do you have any questions regarding the Rangers and what David Quinn did there?
Well, yeah, you know, just hearing the path, and I'm really just intrigued, too, by the sort of the journey of it. I wonder if by the time you got to be the head coach of the New York Rangers, are there moments where you're there, you know, you guys have been great since you've been there. Well, not great since you've been there, but you've turned the corner, and now you guys are showing some real promise. Have there been moments of being starstruck, of being in New York City, of like, holy crap, I'm the coach of the Rangers, or is it just business as usual, another coaching job?
It's funny you say that, Justin, because when I'm actually coaching and you're in, I tell this to coaches that ask about what it's like. I don't feel any different than when I was coaching in Ann Arbor, Nebraska, Omaha, Cleveland. It's hockey. You're dealing with people. You're coaching hockey. You know, you got to handle, obviously you got to handle the players different, but regardless of where you're coaching, you have to handle your players different everywhere. You know, within the roster, you got to handle your players different. So, you know, it's the same recipe for success. It's, you know, having your team prepared, establishing a work ethic, having a connection to your players, and getting them to play to the best of their ability. That being said, every day there's a moment that goes by that I'm walking around, and whether I'm walking in MSG, and I just look, I can't believe I'm coaching the New York Bleeding Rangers. You know, I mean, that's just the reality, you know. I mean, But I felt that way when I was at BU. I remember, you know, every day at one point in time, I felt BU was at, you know, obviously not that grand a stage, but in the college hockey world, you know, how the hell did I become the head coach at BU? You know, I mean, it was a, and I've been incredibly fortunate in my coaching career.
My first day as the GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs, I went down to work out, and I caught myself. I was putting on the Maple Leaf logo, and I caught myself and did a double take. And Tim Hunter noticed.
You know what it's like, Berkey, right?
Yeah,
it's real.
Assistant coach noticed. Tim Hunter noticed. He goes, yeah, it's a little different, isn't it? This is a little different than the Vancouver Canucks.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's an original six, and it really, like I said, every day I say to myself, I can't believe I'm coaching the New York Rangers. It's an incredible, incredible opportunity.
David, before we let you go, I got to ask you, there was one really special moment that stands out to this Rangers season, at least for an individual effort, and that was Mika Zibanejad's five-goal game. What do you remember most about that and how it unfolded and how the team and the fans reacted?
I'm telling you, it was so electric in that building that night. And I think, you know, regardless of what was going to happen, you know, what went on the last 6-7 weeks for us was so important in our development as an organization and where we want to get to. And, you know, Mika Zibanejad, I was telling everybody when I took this job a year ago after I started coaching, I said, I don't know if people realize how good this guy is. And, you know, we're so fortunate that, you know, our two-star players, and we've got a lot of good ones, but two guys that have obviously separated themselves have been Mika Zibanejad and obviously Artemi Panarin. And what makes it all so exciting is the type of people they are. But one thing you remember about that night is that the game, not only did he score five goals, but in a game of that impact, with that atmosphere against the Washington Capitals, with our season on the line every night when you're in that playoff push, you know, he scores a goal every which way possible. You know, he scores at the end, you know, with a minute and a half to go to make it 5-4, and the roof almost blows off the building. And then, of course, Ovechkin ties it. And then 30 seconds into overtime, Panarin makes an unbelievable pass to Mika, and he gets the fifth. And, you know, I wasn't there, but it was amazing to listen to the people that had been around the Rangers for a while. They hadn't heard that building that loud since, I think it was 2015, when in Game 7, when they beat, I think it was Washington, to go to the Eastern Conference Final, Game 7 overtime. I think Stepan scored the overtime winner in Game 7 at the Garden. You know, whether it would be Mark Stahl or Hank or those guys, they would say that they had never heard the building that loud since that night. So,
Quinny, we'll argue this over a beer sometime on why he was on the ice when Ovechkin scored, for God's sake.
It's a pet peeve of Berkey's.
You say that, Berkey. I should have called a freaking timeout, is what I
said. I can't stand coaches not using their timeouts. And I can't stand them and put star players on the ice to try to get empty net goals. Drives me nuts.
Well, he's a good defensive player, too, so I got to put him out there.
He's got the longest stick on your team, too.
He sure does. And he's a hell of a player. But the night, the magnet, you know, the five goals, but it wasn't a 7-2 win. And this guy scores five goals against the Washington Capitals in a game of that magnitude. It was just an incredible night. And just so happy for him, and obviously a huge 2 points for us that night.
Yeah, it was so much fun to watch on our end as well. We were jumping out of our seats on that night as well, watching that. Listen, David, continued success. We can't wait. You know, we just can't wait to have you guys back, you behind the bench and the players back on the ice. We all look forward to when that day comes. Stay safe, my friend, and thank you so much for joining us here on Hockey Central.
All right, guys, great talking to you. Stay safe, too, okay?
Thanks, Quinny.
All right, there's David Quinn, the head coach of the New York Rangers, says he has to pinch himself thinking about the fact that he's sitting behind the bench on an original six franchise, a storied franchise like the New York Rangers. Speaking of storied franchises in the National Hockey League, up next we're going to dig a little deeper with Justin Bourne and Brian Burke on the Montreal Canadiens, how their season played out, what they can look forward to, and where they stand as an NHL franchise. It's all coming up right here on Hockey Central.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back, Hockey Central. Justin Bourne, Brian Burke, David Amber, and we're going around the National Hockey League. We have nothing but time. We're going to delve into all 31 teams, give them a little bit of love to sort of flash back on what their season looked like, on what things might look ahead. And today, we're going to dive into the Montreal Canadiens, who finished the season, at least the pause season, 12th in the East. They were 10 points out of a playoff spot. And it's worth reflecting on the fact they've missed the playoff, guys, three times the last 4 years. So I think what kind of did them in this year, they had 2 8-game winless streaks. That's very tough to fight back from. And their home record, you know, Justin, 14 wins in 37 home games. But give us a thought, your overall thought, Justin, we'll start with you on what you saw from the Montreal Canadiens, and then we'll get into where this team is heading.
Well, it was a strange season for the Canadiens, and part of the reason they're so tough to judge is just because of their injuries. I mean, they weren't healthy for a large portion of this season, and there's a lot to like on that Montreal Canadiens roster when they are healthy. I think my main issue with this roster is just elite talent, and you look around the league, and particularly the Atlantic, their division they're in there, where the Boston Bruins top end with the Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak line, and I'll save everyone the time of going through the list of what Tampa has and what Toronto has, and the other great teams. Their top end is not, you know, can't hang in terms of elite status, so they're looking at a very nice line with a guy like Brendan Gallagher and Thomas Tatar and Philip Deneau. Like they have some very good players, but that's how I view the Canadiens roster as a whole. There's a lot of very good players, and there's not enough elite players for me to think of them as you know, one of the upper echelon teams in the NHL. This season, you combine that with the injuries and with some poor performance with Carey Price, it just added up to a whole lot of disappointment.
And Berkey, that sounds fair. I mean, Tatar was the only player they had in the top 80 in league scoring. And, you know, Justin brings up a good point. Well, listen, in a division with so much high-end scoring, like, I think Justin's point is the most salient point. Carey Price gets a lot of criticism. The blue line isn't a fantastic overall blue line. They're certainly older skewing aside from Victor Mete. But to me, the biggest issue's got to be the lack of top-end elite scoring. Do you see it the same way, Brian?
Yeah, I'm going to use two musical references today when we talk about our team. So with Ottawa, I'm going to talk about the Timbuk 3 and their song Future's So Bright.
Future's So Bright.
With Montreal, it's going to be Truckin' by the Grateful Dead. What a long, strange trip it's been. Because to me, there's not enough top-end forwards. There's not enough secondary scoring. There's not enough size. There's not enough goaltending. There's not enough special teams. There wasn't enough health. Just not enough. Not only to not be elite, like Justin says, but to make the playoffs. Now, is there a lot to like? Yeah, there are guys that had, I thought, really good years. I'm a big Domi fan. I don't know if they're going to be able to sign him or not. I thought Armia really came through for them. Mm-hmm. So not, some nice surprises, some nice pieces, but not enough. Just not enough. I was going through it last night trying to think, what's the problem here? Because you want to be concise and say, well, it's this. Like Justin said, there's not enough high-end skill. But I'm like, not enough secondary scoring, and now more. I just got nice pieces, but not enough.
Berkey, that has to be the absolute most, I guess, damning criticism of a team, because what do you do about that? Like, that is the hardest problem to correct. And I look at what you did with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and regardless of what people think or even you feel now about the Phil Kessel trade, I think you came to Toronto and identified that there was just a lack of elite top-end guys. That has to be the hardest hole to plug. Where do you even start there, right?
Yeah, and we ended up, I'll admit that frankly, we ended up paying way more than we thought we would, because we never thought we'd forfeit that high a pick. Actually, sure, at Christmas time, I think we would have picked 13th. And then we went on the big slide. But anyway, to me, you lost four times to Detroit. That right there puts you back in the hunt if you win those four games. You had 2 8-game losing streaks. These are not postage stamps on a postcard that's going anywhere fast. These are postage stamps on a postcard that's going to be in the not delivered pile. Their home record's not good enough. Like, there's all kinds of symptoms here. It wouldn't take a doctor long to inspect them and say, it's not good. 23rd in power play. They've got enough high-end pieces that they should have a good power play. 19th in the PK. I mean, these are signs that your team isn't competitive. So to me, listen, it's just not enough.
I think these are all fair criticisms. I think part of the issue as well is they're an older skewing team. And when you look at the other teams in their division specifically, there's a lot of good young talent and a lot more depth, as you mentioned, Brian. This could all change. This could all change in the next 12 months. And if I'm going to be the optimist, I'm going to say Marc Bergevin's taken his lumps, and he certainly has made some questionable moves. As all GMs, you're going to win some, lose some. But one thing he has done is he's positioned his team in this draft, whenever it takes place, wherever it takes place. It was supposed to take place in Montreal. He has 14 picks in this draft, guys, 9 in the first 4 rounds. So what I want to ask you is, What does he need to do? You obviously aren't going to add 6 and 7 players from the draft onto your roster, but what is it incumbent on Marc Bergevin to do this summer? So he's got this mix of good young talent coming up, but you also need to have some good established NHL players to wait for these guys to be ready. What do you do?
Well, I think you split the picks. You trade a couple of picks for veteran guys, and then you use the other ones. The other thing about Marc Bergevin is he's taken a lot of heat, but if you look at his record on trades, he's like a savant. Like, if you break his trades down one by one, he's been unbelievable how he's kicked asses on some of the GMs around the league with the trades he's made. So he definitely deserves to stay and sort this out. I love the draft picks piled up. Same with Ottawa. They had a pile of draft picks. And I think he can fix this. But it's not like, if you go back and just say, okay, if they stopped one of those 8-game losing streaks after 5 games and won the next 3 and done the same thing on the second one, they're a playoff team with the 12-point differential right there. If you throw in 2 wins against Detroit, now that they're in the playoffs by 4 points. So they're not that far out of it. That's the beauty of the modern system, is they're not that far out of it. And I think he's the right guy to fix it. But, again, you want to make some pithy remark, right? You want to come on and say, here's what's wrong with the Montreal Canadiens. It's this guy or that guy. And I'm going through last night, I'm saying, multiple symptoms of trauma here.
There are a lot of stab wounds.
Justin, go on.
I was just going to say that I actually like the way that the roster is filled up around the fringes. Like, you know, Paul Byron's a nice player. Like, a lot of their support guys, Arturi Lehkonen's pretty good. Nick Suzuki is very promising. I know you wouldn't call him a support guy, but I kind of like how they're built around the edges. But again, I come back to the same issue of when you get to the core of it, what would worry me if I were a fan of this team is, if you talk to a fan right now, they'll say, well, you know, Kotkaniemi's on the way, and he's going to be a better player after this AHL experience. And Nick Suzuki was, he looks like he could be a star in the league. And you rattle off a few players. Every team has a few players on the way. Like, you know, maybe there are some exceptions, and our Toronto Maple Leafs here may be one, but there are, you know, every team who's at the bottom or even the middle has some guys on the way. And so I think you're in a position where you have to get some established players with these picks. You need some bodies that you can lean on, some tent pole guys. And I know that's a lot easier said than it is to actually execute for a general manager. It just feels to me like they need to bring in some real bodies they can count on a consistent basis. That seems to be lacking.
And I think Kotkaniemi is going to be a good player. I do think he's going to work out fine. I like that pick. I think Suzuki's got a chance because he can play center and wing. He's got a chance to be a really useful player, too. But like you say, Justin, we're going to get to Ottawa. They got Batherson. They got this guy.
I mean, sure.
Every team's got guys waiting in the wings.
Yeah, listen, Kotkaniemi, you could argue he took a step back in his sophomore year, played 30-something games, 6 goals. And maybe what's going to haunt him a little bit is the expectations, because Brady Tkachuk was taken with the very next pick. Tkachuk seems like a much better rounded, today at least, NHL player, provides so much of the things you would want, especially a team like Montreal, where, Berkey, you mentioned they're undersized. A guy like Tkachuk makes everyone bigger on the ice. Quinn Hughes was taken after Kotkaniemi, and a lot of GMs, 6 GMs passed up on Hughes, so it's certainly not just on Marc Bergevin.
No, but my point is, I would say, David, those are good points, but just beware. Look at Leon Draisaitl's path to the NHL.
Yep, takes
look
some time.
Look at the Sedins. Like, Draisaitl had to go back to Prince Albert and play some in the American League. He didn't step right in. So this is
absolutely.
These are not abnormal setbacks. This is not like, oh, Kotkaniemi is the only guy who's had to do this. This is a common path. And I do think he's going to come out of it. I like his skill level. I like his compete level. Not going to say he's going to be a Sedin or a Draisaitl, but my point is the fact that he had to go to Laval isn't fatal to a kid. And in fact, the minutes he was getting, he's probably way better off in Laval. Now we've got to see
right
how he deals
do,
with the adversity.
Sure. And listen, they do have some guys. Cole Caulfield's a very interesting young prospect. You know, I know he lacks size. Everyone wants to make point of how small he is, 5'7", 160 pounds, whatever. But this guy is a stud. I mean, he broke Austin Matthews' record for goals in the USHL. There's huge pedigree they feel coming his way. So, Ryan Poehling, Caden Primo is an interesting one because, he's expected to be the goalie of the future for the Montreal Canadiens. We don't have much time to finish up on the Habs, but I do want to get to Carey Price. What do you do with Carey Price? Highest paid goalie in the National Hockey League, $10.5 million. When he's Carey Price, he's still arguably the best, if not the second best goalie in the National Hockey League. But when he stumbles, like we saw in November each of the last 2 years, it's a fatal situation for a team that's so dependent on a goalie making that much money. So what do you do with Carey Price, gentlemen?
Well, you start the backup for every game in November. That's rule number one. Every single game, Carey Price watches from the bench. No, I think two things. First, I'm a fan, so I'm probably not a good guy to ask. I really like him as a player. I don't know him that well, but he sure seems like a good kid too. And he's a hunter, so I like guys that hunt. But to me, I don't think there's much you can do but be patient with him, because I don't think he's tradable at that salary. And I still believe in him. I think you just got to ride it out. He had a tough November last year and again this year. Then he bounced back. Then he didn't bounce back this year so much. But I think you got to ride it out.
You know what's a little bit of a concern for this Montreal Canadiens organization is just they haven't developed anyone internally. Like, sorry to skip off on the Price thing, but just thinking about my days at the Marlies and when we played the St. John's Ice Caps and they had all these guys they thought were going to be players. McCarron was one of the guys that they were high on, and Nikita Sherbak and Charles Houdon. They just haven't developed anyone. They've won one playoff game in the minors going back like 7 years or something like that, and missed the playoffs six times. That's somewhere they can shore up their organization too, is their minor league team hasn't really developed them. Any surprises? So that's no good.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of the issues. It's going to be very interesting. If there's one team that's maybe the X factor this offseason, you'd have to argue it might be the Montreal Canadiens. Again, holding 14 picks in the draft, 9 picks in the first 4 rounds, and all sorts of cap space to play with as well. 26th as far as payroll currently. And remember, they made that offer sheet to Sebastian Aho. Maybe this could have been a very different complexion to this Hab team if you added an elite player like Sebastian Aho, who has proven at a very young age to be a superstar in the National Hockey League. So
David, maybe there's some more tricks. Sorry, have we got Berkey's take on that offer sheet before? Berkey, have you weighed in on that? I'd be curious to know what you thought of it.
On the Aho,
Sebastian Aho one. Like, it didn't seem like a legitimate attempt to get the player. The number wasn't that outrageous. Some people said it was a favor for the agent. Or do you just think they missed? What happened there?
No, I can tell you exactly what happened there. The owner had conveyed to Donnie Waddell, we are not going to do any big signing bonus deals. We're not going to do this. We're not going to do that. So based on what Donnie Waddell told Bergevin and the agent structured this with all the elements the owner said he wouldn't do.
And then $21 million, I believe, in the first year, guys. Yeah. I believe it was $21 million last year, like in the first 12 months.
And like, yeah, we're going to match that. So it was actually done to the penny. It's actually done to the penny, the cheapest number that Montreal honestly believed they could sign him for and not get matched, based on direct representations from the owner through the GM. We're not doing any big signing bonus in the first year. We're not doing this. They thought they were doing it very cleverly. And it was actually some real smart GMing that backfired because the owner changed his mind, which they're entitled to do.
And listen, as much as we want to critique the actual offer sheet, he at least made an offer sheet, right? In a summer where you had Marner and Aho and Rantanen and Point, and he's the one guy who stepped up and actually said, I'm going to try and do something that we haven't seen done in many, many years. So kudos to Marc Bergevin for that. Brighter days ahead, but right now there's definitely, as you guys mentioned, a lot of question marks surrounding this team. And we started this conversation by mentioning Max Domi, Victor Mete, both RFAs as well. So again, the Montreal Canadiens, a massive X factor whenever we do go into the offseason in this NHL year. So we dug in on the Habs, and we're going to stay in the Atlantic Division. Coming up after the break, the Ottawa Senators, a deeper dive into what the future holds. And according to Brian Burke, the future's so bright they better wear shade. So we'll dig into the Ottawa Senators coming up on Hockey Central.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Back, Hockey Central. Brian Burke, Justin Bourne, David Amber. We just took a look at the Montreal Canadiens. Next up, the Ottawa Senators. Guys, probably positioned where we thought they were going to be. 30th in the National Hockey League. They're going to miss the playoffs for a fourth straight year. But there is some promise. 30th in payroll. They have 3 first-round draft picks coming up, including San Jose's, and the Sharks currently with the third-worst record in the NHL, so they could have conceivably two top three picks in this draft. They have 4 second-round picks, 2 third-round picks, but a lot of question marks surrounding this team. Let's start with you, Brian. Your overall thought on the Ottawa Senators, where they were this year and where they're heading?
Well, they're 30th overall, so whatever excitement you might feel about the Ottawa Senators, you better temper it a little bit. They got a long way to go, and I'm going to put a little black cloud over the horizon to start with. I do think the future's bright, but the ownership situation there, until that's resolved in the minds of the people, like not saying resolved in the sense that the team's for sale or not, it's not. But until there's some faith that there's a plan there and the owner is going to deliver, that's fine. So you say that 30th in payroll, they got a bunch of dead money. They've astutely used dead money to pick up draft picks. So they've got dead money that comes off the books this year. So Ryan Callahan comes off at 5.8. Clark MacArthur comes off at 4.6. Marian Gaborik stays one more year at 4.8. So they've used their cap space wisely. But the arena's in the wrong place and people aren't confident in the owner. So that's a little black cloud on the horizon all the time. Mm-hmm. And the question is, if you're a season ticket holder, is, okay, you got all these draft picks, but how soon? Okay, so you look at their American League team in Belleville's in first place in their division. They've got some really good young kids there. Batherson, Norris, and Branstrom would be the ones I would say that were the best chance to play right away. They're all going to play, in my opinion. So they've got that help coming. They've got some nice pieces on their team. Their special teams are horrible, that's very typical of a struggling young team. But you look at, they got Brady Tkachuk, they got Colin White, they've got some good young players. They got Connor Brown. Thomas Chabot's going to be a star if he's not already. So there's some really good pieces there. Question is, how do they meld these prospects and picks into a winning team? How long does it take? Because that's all season ticket holders are interested in.
Justin?
Yeah, just looking at what they've built there, it feels like, let's say that Ottawa Senators, if you just took all of their situation, their salary cap, their current roster, their draft picks, everything, and said that was the Toronto Maple Leafs organization, I would find it really easy to sit here and say, this is a team on the poised on the verge of doing big things. I mean, they have 7 picks between the first and second round coming up this season. I mean, that is unbelievable to go with, as we mentioned, first place in the division in the American League. Lots of talent on the horizon, lots of reason to be excited, and some good young players on the roster. The concern is exactly what Berkey mentioned, is just, how do we know as fans, how do you know as an analyst that they're going to do the right things with these players, they're going to put them in the position to succeed, when it always feels like it comes down to money? And I know that there was an effort to sign Thomas Chabot to sort of demonstrate, look, this is it. You know, this group of young guys we're going to rally behind, and this is where our hope lies, and we're going to start to do things differently. But I find it really hard to look at an organization that was willing to let Mark Stone go for any cost. And take it seriously that this is a team trying to win the Stanley Cup and not just sort of stay afloat and do things on the cheap. So I do think that. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, Justin. I thought you were done. I hate interrupting you. Sorry. One other thing. I make my notes and I get all worked up doing these shows and I forget a couple things. I like the fact that the team has taken on the personality of their head coach. I really like their head coach, DJ Spence.
Yes, me too. Mm-hmm.
Jack Capuano is really underrated. I got to work with him in the World Cup. He's a really good coach. He should be a head coach again in the NHL and soon. Davis Payne, again, quiet guy, real good resume. And Bob Jones, who's followed DJ around in junior hockey, quality guy. I like the coaching staff. I believe in the coaching staff. I don't like the fact, as Justin just said, that they've allowed quality, high-character veterans to walk. Letting Mark Stone go, really hard to see how that makes sense anywhere. Letting Jean-Gabriel Pageau go, which, the only guy they've managed to keep is Chabot after pledging that they would purge the team and then begin to re-sign and keep guys. So that's the question mark, is can you have faith in the game plan here? I think the GM knows what he's doing, but is he going to be given the resources to do it and keep guys around? Now, I have not asked Pierre Dorion, and I won't because it's none of my business, if they made a conscious, good-faith effort to sign Jean-Gabriel Pageau. And if they did that, and then he asked for, say, 7 years of crazy money, okay, then trade him. We get it. But I think the season ticket holders in Ottawa would like to know if that was, in fact, done. quality guy like that, did they make a good effort, a good faith effort to sign him? If they didn't, I'd be sour. I'd be like, we can't just drive guys to the airport. We got to keep some of these guys here.
And that's fair. And I think, listen, we don't know the intricacies of those conversations. And quite frankly, from what I heard, at least, Mark Stone was very eager to get to Las Vegas, a team that could be on the cusp of something special with a much better tax system, a much better team by all accounts, and a different lifestyle potentially. So maybe that was just something that was uncontrollable. As far as Pageau goes, maybe at this stage in his career, you're right. Maybe he wanted more money than they were willing to pay, and they did get a first and a second for him. So there are some positives, even though they saw some of these players go. But to me, the biggest positive I see when I look at this Ottawa team is you have Brady Tkachuk, that I think can be sort of the Wendell Clark, for lack of a better comparison, for the Ottawa Senators. I mean, this guy is tough. He's physical. He's just 20 years old. He led the team in points at the pause. And then you have Thomas Chabot, who led the league in ice time. You have two guys, 23 and younger, one a forward and one a defenseman, and that's a pretty good cornerstone. And that's what when we were talking about Montreal, they were missing a little bit of that cornerstone, the stars, necessarily. Do you guys look at it like, at least with these two cornerstones and these guys who are coming up, there is some real promise moving forward with the Senators?
I do, but look, compare this to, say, Vancouver, mm-hmm. where they've got two promising young kids, more than that, and they sign their veterans to extensions, and they try and keep guys around. They try and build around those kids. They trade a first-round pick, a very expensive deal to bring in JT Miller. They're adding to the base. They're trying to get better. They're putting these kids with a better chance to succeed by surrounding them with veteran players who can play. Every veteran that's of any consequence in Ottawa gets a one-way ticket out of town. I'm dying to see what they do with Mark Borowiecki. I can't believe that they haven't re-signed him yet. I really can't believe it.
Yeah, that's shocking. That guy is the face, essentially, of the franchise, both in the community and on the ice. One of the toughest players in the league. It's crazy that Borowiecki hasn't been re-signed yet. That, to me, is the biggest problem I see there.
Yeah, well, and that's, you know, David, you mentioned that, like, you know, that Mark Stone wanted to get to Vegas for XYZ reasons, and maybe Pageau asked for, you know, this many years or this much term. Part of the reason guys want to get somewhere else is because of the situation they've created, and it doesn't feel like they're trying to be as competitive. Part of the reason a guy like Pageau might make an unreasonable ask is because he's okay with leaving when he doesn't get the answer he wants. Mm.
And that's all fair. And that's why this is a big offseason. We mentioned the big offseason for the Montreal Canadiens. This is another big offseason, clearly, for the Ottawa Senators. Can they make that legitimate leap and change the narrative surrounding this team? They have the opportunity. 3 first-round picks, 4 second-round picks. And as Brian and Justin alluded to, they have to add some legitimate NHL players as well to really be considered a playoff team moving into next year. A great second hour coming your way. Jason Spezza from the Toronto Maple Leafs. Chris Pronger, a Hall of Famer. Florida Panthers senior VP of Hockey Ops. It's all coming up. Hour 2, Hockey Central, next. Welcome back. Hour 2 of Hockey Central. Justin Bourne, Brian Burke, David Amber. Great to have you along. First day of April. Thank goodness March is behind us. And we have a good hour coming your way. Hour 2 of Hockey Central. Jason Spezza, Toronto Maple Leafs forward, will be joining us in about 25 minutes' time. And in a matter of moments, Chris Pronger, the Hall of Famer, the Stanley Cup winner, and currently the Senior VP of Hockey Ops for the Florida Panthers, will jump on the show. And that begs the question, Brian, you won a cup with Chris Pronger in Anaheim. We don't see any Chris Prongers in the NHL anymore. It's a much kinder and gentler National Hockey League. Now, this guy was suspended 8 times playing in what was a much more fierce and brutal NHL. So I want your guys' opinion. How would he fare in today's NHL? I guess he would obviously have to change his game, but would he be essentially suspended the entire year based on what happened, the way he played the game?
Well, remember when he first came into the league, there were guys, big guys taking runs at him too. You had to defend yourself a lot more than you have to now. So the guy I think that plays still a lot like Chris is Shea Weber. I think they have a lot of elements in common, but Chris is a really smart guy and he would have adapted to play in any era. But back then, you know, like I remember I went into St. Louis one time and I'll tell a story when he gets on. I went in just to warn him. I was getting a tape on him every night. And Bettman said, go talk to him. Try and calm him down. You drafted him, for Christ's sake. So, but I remember it didn't go too well with Chris. He didn't want to hear it.
No,
I'll
I can imagine
him of that when he gets on here.
And listen, I would have loved to have heard those conversations you had with Chris Pronger when you were heading up discipline with the National Hockey League, and he was probably your number one. He was probably on the bat line, right? Just press nine, and you'll get Chris Pronger.
Speed dial three. It was so that night. Oh, I'll tell a story anyway. He's coming off the ice, and I'm waiting for him, and I think Terry Gregson was the referee. And that night. So Prongs comes off the ice, and he said, "Hey, what are you doing here?" I said, "I came to talk to you." He said, "So talk." I said, "Well, why don't you get showered and we'll talk?" He said, "No, stay where you have to stay." I said, "I'm getting a tape on you every night. You got to calm down. You got to stop doing the baseball grip chops." Because Keenan taught him when they were killing penalties, you can do whatever you want when you're killing a penalty. They won't call a second penalty. So they're doing these baseball grip swings and everything. So he said, "Okay, fine." He was good. So then the referee says to me, there's a player wants to see you. I said, "Who?" And he said, "The tough right winger." I'm drawing a blank. Kelly, what's his name?
Kelly Chase.
Kelly Chase. And so he said, "Chaser wants to see you." And I'm like, "What? For what?" He said, "Well, he wants to see you." So I go down to the St. Louis dressing room, and I said to Keaton, where's Kelly Chase? And he goes, "He's in the training room." I said, "Well, you want me to wait for him outside?" He said, "No, go in and talk to him." So I go in, he's lying on the training table, and I walk in, and he goes, I said, what do you need, Chaser? And he goes, he starts just cursing at me. This NHL and you. So I say, I just lost. I dropped my briefcase on the ground. I said, "How dare you talk to a senior vice president from the NHL like that? Who the hell do you think you are?" And he jumped off at the table. And guys, honest to God, I thought we were going to fight. So I took a step forward. I'm like, I'm getting my feet ready in case you have to fight, right? And he stops about a foot away. I thought Bettman's going to be so unhappy with me. I said, "Kelly, calm down. What's your beef?" So we had a good talk, and then I was like, "Hey, lay off the Sudafed next time."
Oh, Brian, I would pay to see that. Chaser's an all-time great guy in the league, too.
Oh, wonderful guy.
A fierce, fierce competitor, and I know you're a fierce competitor, too. So, Chris Pronger, I mean, honestly, we talked last time I did the show with you guys. I talked about Eric Lindros as a one-of-a-kind player, and I think in many respects Chris Pronger is cut from the same cloth. And I know Shea Weber has a part of him in him that's Chris Pronger-esque. But Pronger, when he played in the league, you know, there was Scott Stevens as well, but Pronger seemed to me to be that one-of-a-kind guy. That if you're going to have a bona fide Stanley Cup type team, you need a Chris Pronger there to anchor your blue line.
Well, if you look at his impact, the team, he took five teams to the finals, I think. He played in the Stanley Cup finals five times, and every time they went, the year after they traded him, that team missed the playoffs. So, like, he took Edmonton to the playoffs in 06. The year after they traded him to us, they missed the playoffs. So the Pronger effect is very real. I remember when we were going through his induction stuff at the Hockey Hall of Fame, I nominated Chris, but it wasn't me making that point. Someone else made that point and said he's had a direct impact on playoff success on five teams.
I think Justin? We overlook sometimes the value of intimidation as a very real tool, particularly for a defenseman, and we didn't used to. But today, you know, in the NHL, you look at a lot of teams trying to play a purely skill game. It's still hockey. It's still a game of physical confrontation and battling for your area of the ice. And I think Pronger got to a point where guys knew they weren't going to win the battle, so they didn't even go to those areas of the ice. And I think that's a bit of a lost tool today for defensemen.
So we'll welcome in Chris Pronger in a matter of moments. We're waiting on him, senior advisor for hockey ops for the Florida Panthers.
He's the best first passer I ever had.
Oh, yeah?
Best first passer I ever had. He could, and because of his size, his height, he could actually kind of reach around the net and hammer a tape-to-day pass to the red line without moving his body out from behind the net. He's 6'6". He's like trying to get around a giraffe. And so... But best first passer I ever had. You know, I've had some really good defensemen that played for me, but this guy, his first pass was, you're out of the zone, man. That first pass is perfect.
And one thing I want to ask him about is also what his future holds, because we see him now, it's funny, when he was on the league discipline side, a lot of guys chuckled saying, well, if anyone would know what's crossing the line, it'd be Chris Pronger. And now here he is working for a team in hockey ops with the Florida Panthers and does a GM role or, some type of senior exec role or even a coaching position interest Chris Pronger moving forward. You said he certainly has the hockey IQ to jump into those sort of spots, right, Brian?
Yeah, he does. He's a very intelligent guy, very intelligent off the ice. Really impressive family. His mom and dad, because I drafted his brother when I was in Vancouver and I worked for Pat. We drafted Sean Pronger. So I drafted both boys and got to know the family a little bit. Great family, successful business people from Dryden, Ontario. Humble kids with an edge, but humble. And Sean played the college route, and then Chris obviously went to Peterborough and then went to the NHL.
Well, without further ado, let's welcome him in. Chris Pronger, the Hockey Hall of Famer, Senior Advisor of Hockey Ops for the Florida Panthers, joins us on Hockey Central. Chris, I hope you're listening in because Justin, Brian, and I were singing your praises for the last 5 minutes, and
it's
getting a bit nauseating almost.
Where do I send the check?
Yeah, there you go, Chris. Hey, where are you and how are you and your family doing right now?
I'm in St. Louis, Missouri, on lockdown. Just started online schooling yesterday with the kids, so that's always interesting.
Well, we're in the same boat, so I understand what you mean by interesting. Well, hang in there, and I'm glad you're safe and sound. And before we get into, you know, Brian and Justin have a lot of questions for you, but I do want to start with the idea of here you are now, Senior Advisor of Hockey Ops for the Panthers. Is this a stepping stone? Are we going to see?
Hello?
Hey, Prongs.
Oh, sorry, I lost you.
Yeah, I think we might have lost David, so let me finish the question. Oh. Is this a stepping stone? He wants to know, do you have aspirations of becoming a GM or a president of hockey operations next?
Yeah, I think I'd like to. You know, as you know, they're few and far between, and they're hard to get. So, you know, I think this is a step to further enhance my resume and learn more, and obviously working with Dale. As you know, he's a wealth of knowledge and somebody that's well-respected around the league. So, you know, I think that was one of the reasons I took the job. And then, obviously, the challenge of trying to turn around an organization and turn around a team that had a lot of good pieces to it. And now it's a matter of supplementing and adding to those starter players in Barkov, Huberto, and Ekblad and getting the right pieces around them to help them hopefully get to where we want to be.
And people don't know this, but Dale Tallon is a great judge of talent, but more importantly, he's a great guy. I mean, this job is so hard that if you don't work with great people, it's really hard, and he's a great guy.
No, absolutely. He makes it interesting and fun every day, which is great. It's fun to come to the rink and work when your boss is laughing and joking and having a good time. But having said that, serious and dedicated and has a passion for winning and a passion for building a winning hockey club. So it's been a great 3 years thus far, and you know we'll see where it takes me.
Well, what's sense so far? Because the season's been up and down. I'm not going to insult you or your team, but the season's been up and down.
It wouldn't be the first time.
Well, on radio, it'd be the first time. What are some of the issues facing your team? The goaltending hasn't been good enough at times. What else?
Well, I think us just understanding that we don't have to score 8 goals a game. I think realizing that you need to tighten things up defensively. When you get a 3-1 lead, you don't open the gates up and play robot hockey. You've got to tighten things up and let the other team make mistakes so you can capitalize and transition and get on the attack and play offense where you want to be. And I think at times our team struggles with understanding the game within the game and understanding game management, clock management. You know, I think over the last couple of years, that's really plagued us, where we're going into the third period either tied or with a lead, and we wind up losing and not even getting the loser's point, the tie, we lose in regulation. And, you know, I think that's something that I'd like to see us really focus on. And I think that, you know, that's obviously hockey sense and leadership and guys in the room coming together and really understanding how bad do we want to win, what are we willing to do to win, and then going out and doing that. And we're seeing spurts of it, but we're not consistent enough on that end to be a playoff team right now. You know, we're a few points out of the playoffs, and you know, hopefully we're able to get a few games into the regular season to try to get in. But you know, having said that, we've got a few things to iron out here.
We're talking to Chris Pronger, our Senior Advisor of Hockey Operations for the Florida Panthers. And Chris, you talked about that, the want, and you were one of those guys that teams could lean on to hold everyone accountable. You held yourself accountable, and that's why you had such great success as an NHL star. How different is the game today? Young players signing big contracts early in their careers. How different is that? And is that a real challenge to keep these guys motivated, you know, once they've had the financial success that so many young players in the game have?
Well, I just think, you know, kids nowadays, they're a little bit different. Obviously, they've grown up with the internet. They've grown up, you know, with everybody knowing who they are and the notoriety and you know, these high-level AAA hockey teams going to all these different places. Some of these teams fly on private jets. I mean, it gets a little crazy. But I think they didn't play in that era where toughness and grinding through adversity and things like that, they've never really had that. And I think the NHL, a lot of times, is the first place they get that where the games can be hard. They're challenged, especially when their young players come into the league. They're challenged physically. They're challenged mentally. They're challenged by their coach. They're challenged by their teammates for the most part. And I think the identity of players challenging one another in the locker room, I don't really see that very often. I'd like to see it more. You know, I think you look at the elite teams in the league and the teams that are successful year in and year out, the Bostons of the world, you know, they hold each other accountable. You could say the same thing in Tampa. You could say the same thing last year in St. Louis. You look at how these teams play the game, but also how they are on and off the ice together as a unit, as a group. You know, yeah, there's always the good-natured ribbing and things like that, but they're also, you know, they're not going out and in the media calling each other out. They're doing it behind closed doors saying, hey, I've got to be better. You got to be better. You know, there wasn't really, especially like, for instance, last year in St. Louis, I didn't really see any of the players come out and rip one another. I didn't even see them rip the coach before he got fired. And then as they started turning the corner, you could see that galvanize them and really unify them. And once Chief came in and kind of implemented his system, got them playing a little bit different, you could see them, because they didn't turn on one another, because they were that cohesive unit, that they really took off. And obviously, as Berkey mentioned, having great goaltending can cure a lot of things. Yeah. And the run Binnington was on was remarkable. But I think the biggest point is that unified belief in not only your talent, but your willingness to compete and win puck battles and you know, win that net front battle or win the puck battle to score a goal. And you know, when everybody can rely on one another and you don't have to constantly be reminding us, hey, you got to play hard. You know, I think that for me, that was always the biggest thing that pissed me off was I shouldn't have to tell you to play hard. I mean, that should be a given.
Yeah. Chris Pronger, senior advisor of hockey operations for the Florida Panthers. Justin, go ahead.
Yeah, Chris, I think one thing that fans are interested in is just, you know, the inner workings of an NHL front office. And, you know, I think a lot of times we see smart hockey people get snapped up by organizations and like yourself with Florida and getting a title like, you know, assistant VP of hockey ops. Now, I've sat beside someone doing hockey operations and they're booking hotels and planning buffet meals. I don't get the impression that's what you're doing for the Florida Panthers. I wonder if you could fill fans in on just what your role would entail for the Florida Panthers.
Yeah, no, I'm really there to help support Dale and be another ear for him. Obviously, do amateur scouting, do pro scouting, track free agents. You know, just as another voice if he wants to run something by me. I've obviously been GM'd and coached by a lot of the greats in the league. Sorry, Berkey. And I you know, always ask a lot of questions. So I think now that I'm on the other side of it, I've got a pretty good grasp of and also following my work at the Department of Player Safety and kind of learning the behind the scenes stuff and tracking the game and following the trends. You're able to try to get out in front of where the game is and where you think it might be going and what types of players not only can play now, but are going to excel wherever the game is going to go. And I think the 3 years I had in the Department of Player Safety really helped me with that because we track trends a lot. You're not solely focused on a player. You're kind of seeing the overall game, and you're seeing a lot of different trends happen. When, you know, especially the league makes a rule change. Well, what's the outcome? You know, you're trying to stop this, but ultimately, what is it? What does it change over here on the left versus the right? And you're able to really see the game in a different light. And yeah, I like to see the game played a certain way, but I also like to see talent. I like to see skill. You want to see those guys excel. I mean, that's exciting for the fans. The scoring goals is exciting. I've played in some of the best 0-0 games I've ever seen. I've also seen some of the worst 0-0 games I've ever seen. So it doesn't necessarily have to be about scoring, but you want to see where the game is. You know, we all know it's speed and skill and things of that nature, but that rare talent that can put it all together and then package in some hockey sense, those are the guys you're trying to find. How those players fit into your system, fit into the way you guys want to play, and then add the pieces around them to fill out your roster.
Berkey?
Yeah, so, Chris, go back to, obviously I drafted you in Hartford in 93, but I left right after I drafted you, right before the season started. I went to the league. But I brought in Brad McCrimmon to be your mentor. Tell the folks, the listeners, about playing with Brad McCrimmon.
Yeah, it was that was probably one of your smarter moves, Berkey.
He had, I had a few.
He had just come off mentoring. It's funny where you look at his route through the league. He had just come off mentoring Nick Lidstrom, and then he was coming over to mentor me in Hartford. You know, I roomed with Beast. I had dinner with Beast every night on the road. You know, he's a passionate, old school guy that, you know, was structured in the sense of how we would sit there in the middle of dinner, and he'd break out the salt packets and the salt shaker and the pepper, and we'd be breaking the trap on the table. And he's like, "All right, when this happens, you got to move it here. I'll move it back here. We'll move it over here." And we were always talking and strategizing and talking about the game, and just, you know, he was tremendous for me as a young player coming into the league that I could rely on, you know, not only on the ice, but probably more importantly off the ice, as things got a little hairy at times in Hartford. And, you know, you can lean on a veteran like that who'd been around a long time and had seen a lot of different things and pick his brain on, you know, whether it's media, whether it's the opponent, and talking about different scenarios that happened, whether throughout the course of his career or throughout that night's game or that season. We saw a lot my 2 years in Hartford together, and, you know, it was a very, very sad day when I heard he was on that plane in Russia, but I've got a lot of fond memories of the Beast.
But I think people would be shocked at the intricacies of a deal. So, and Prongs knows this. I'm going to ask him a question. He already knows the answer. What was the team? What team did Sergei Makarov play for? Not play for, but was owned by for about a month.
The Whalers.
Yeah. So I had to get Makarov to put him in the deal to be able to trade up to get Chris Pronger. We had the sixth pick. We had to trade up and get him at two. They love Makarov. So Makarov was a Whaler for about a month. Never played a game for us. And then I brought McCrimmon in to mentor this guy. Man, you were a headache. You were a lot of work.
Very high maintenance.
Yeah, but Brad McCrimmon, sad day, lost a great man. When we all called him Beast, but a sad day when we lost Beast on that plane, and the other guys that were lost too. But give some fans, listeners, some sense of the depths you'll go to make sure a guy works out, to bring in Brad McCrimmon, not just to mentor Chris, but to mentor all the young defense. He was excellent.
Yeah, no, he was fantastic. And I think just we had a younger team, and, you know, provide leadership and guidance. And, you know, he played hard. He had a lot of piss and vinegar in him. And, you know, he wanted to try to bring a winning culture to our locker room and to our team. And, you know, I think had that team stayed together, we probably would have figured it out. But you know what? That's the way the world works.
Did you, by the way, from that team, Jeff Sanderson, did you hear about the fish he caught this summer?
Oh, sturgeon?
No, he caught a 77-pound Chinook salmon fishing with me.
Oh, my God.
I'll send you a picture.
Oh, my, that's a monster. Was he fly fishing or?
No, trolling with herring.
Oh, nice. That is the beauty, Berkey.
We look forward to when we can get back out and do all the things like fishing, like all the things you love to do. And it's funny hearing you guys, your career started together, I suppose, brought into the league by Brian Burke and the Hartford Whalers, and you were champions together in 2007 in Anaheim. Listen, Chris, we can't wait to get the season resumed, hopefully sooner than later. And let's see what happens, because I know our listener base here in Toronto, it was, for a long time, it was Toronto and Florida going neck and neck. So we'll see how that all plays out if we can get the season back up and running. Chris, thanks so much for doing this. We really do appreciate the time.
You bet. Thanks, guys. And tell all your listeners to stay home so we can.
We will.
Yes, yes, that's a good. And wash your hands, stay at home. There you go.
Yeah,
or else Chris Pronger will show up on your doorstep. There's Chris Pronger, senior advisor of hockey operations for the Florida Panthers, staying at home in St. Louis, Missouri, with him and his family, where his kids are doing some homeschooling right now, virtual style, so as we all are. That's great. That's great to hear from him. And it's funny, he was such a tough guy on the ice, but such a jovial guy. And you hear the big hearty laughter coming from Chris Pronger, now in his senior advisor role with the Panthers. Up next, we're going to have another NHL vet rolling our way. Jason Spezza, forward with the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll hear how he's spending his time and what his prospects are for what this season has looked like for him. That's all coming up right here on Hockey Central.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Great to have you along. Brian Burke, Justin Bourne, David Amber. We just welcomed in Hockey Hall of Famer Chris Pronger to the show. From one seasoned vet to another, we'll be welcoming in Jason Spezza, the Maple Leafs forward, in a matter of moments. A programming note as well, Ron McLean, up close and personal, but at a distance. A great interview show. Ron McLean will be leading the show tonight. He'll be bringing in Wayne Gretzky and Haley Wickenheiser for an in-depth discussion tonight at 7 o'clock on YouTube, Facebook, and Sportsnet.ca, so you don't want to miss that. Jason Spezza, is he there now? Oh, okay, great. Look at that. All right, Jason Spezza joins the show here on Hockey Central. Jason, thanks for doing this. And I understand you're home with your wife, your young daughters. You have four young daughters. So, first of all, are you surviving okay?
I am. We're doing great. It's been extra time with my kids and getting to know my That's kids good. On a deeper level, helping them go to school. And, it's definitely we're trying to make the most of the situation we're in.
Well, that's great to hear. And it actually, you know what, it does provide. You're probably spending more time than you'd ever imagined, especially during the season with them. So what's been the number one fun thing you've been able to do as, a stay-at-home dad right now with four young girls?
Well, I think just getting them outside, playing with the kids. I think helping them with homework, and we're kind of trying to tackle this homeschool now. So I'm doing Zoom conferences and stuff that I have no experience with. That's been a work in progress, but it is fun to kind of connect with the kids on a deeper level that way.
Yeah, it's been fun. Well, listen, your kids, your daughters, and my daughter and Berkey's daughters are all at the same school right now, so we're all going through the same thing with the online schooling. And we have Justin Bourne and Brian Burke here with us. Justin, why don't you start things out with Jason Spezza, forward with the Leafs?
Sure, I'll take us back to the ice rink. It's been a while since I've thought about much hockey, but Spez, I've been very impressed with your ability to sort of play whatever role has been asked of you in your time with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and even adapting your career from where you were and your playing style over the course of the duration of it. I wonder how you see yourself now as a player. When you head to the rink and what you can do and what you should do, how do you see your game now being best suited to the NHL?
Yeah, I think on our team, my game fits well with the style we play. I think every night can differ for me, and I have to be ready for different challenges. I think I have the ability to play up in the lineup for periods of time, but also my main focus is being a kind of good player on those bottom two lines and being good on the second special teams. And I realize that I'm an older player, and you have to find a niche. You have to be adaptable, and your daily role could change. And sometimes, it doesn't matter how you're playing. You could be playing good, but you get healthy and guys come in. And for me, it's just trying to keep a good attitude, be a good role model in the room for guys, be an ear for guys, try to pay attention to the room. And your role kind of evolves. It becomes a lot, very important to kind of know the pulse of the dressing room, too.
Hey, Berkey.
Okay, Jason, it's Brian Burke here. How are you?
Good, Berkey. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I was going to tell a quick little story, but when I was running the Leafs, you scored a goal against us on the power play. top shelf, glove side. You've scored probably 50 of them. We prepared for it. We game planned for that shot. And I went down and I remember yelling at Ronnie Wilson afterwards, you've only seen that goal 50 times. How come we couldn't defend that goal? Anyway, you got our coach in trouble. I remember we played you guys in the kind of...
He got me in trouble once, too, for calling me for an illegal stick. So we're even.
Okay. We played you guys in the Stanley Cup Finals in 07, obviously. And I remember we're doing our pre-scout, watching you guys play Buffalo in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I thought you were the best player in that series, I thought. We were very nervous about you, the way you played against Buffalo in that series. And you were tough against us, too. But what do you remember about that Buffalo series? You seemed to dominate that one.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I thought it was a good matchup. I thought I was playing with a lot of poise at that time in my career, a lot of confidence. My game had rounded out where I was getting, important minutes. And it was a big challenge to play against the Danny Breers and the Chris Drurys. And it was something that, I was trying to be one of the best players in the league, and it was really motivating. And to have a team where you have a chance to win, I think it makes you just that much more focused as a player. And it's unfortunate we lost you guys in the finals. It's something that still kind of haunts me to this day. But as a player, when you get that confidence, you definitely can ride it through a wave of a playoff.
Yeah, for sure. I thought it was a good series. We really felt going into our series with Detroit that was Stanley Cup Finals for us. Like, we thought we could beat either team coming out of the East, and then we watched that series and we're like, not so sure, man. Spets is playing pretty well. He made us all nervous.
You guys got the better of us, but it was an interesting series, too. And then looking back on it, the games were a lot closer. It was a five-game series, and we had 2 5-on-3s in games 1 and 2, didn't capitalize, and ended up haunting us to lose both games in Anaheim to start. And still to this day, I think about how we could have approached things maybe a little differently. Those are the things as a player that you never forget.
Yeah, and you had to win game 4.
Yeah, exactly.
With Pronger out of the lineup, you had to win game 4 and bring it back 2-2.
Yeah, it would have changed the whole landscape of the series. And with Prong's out, he was what we felt was a difference maker. And to not win that game was tough. And I think we played that way in game 5, unfortunately.
Yeah. Should have, could have, would have, right?
Yeah, I hear you.
Jason Spezza, of course, the Leafs forward, joins us now here on Hockey Central. Justin Bourne, Brian Burke, and David Amber. Jason, listen, you grew up, you dominated in the GTHL, you played OHL hockey in Southern Ontario as well. I imagine part of you was always thinking, if I only could put on, the blue and white of the Maple Leafs. Finally, you get that opportunity. What has it been like for you to experience that? What would you say is unique about playing in this market as a hometown guy?
Yeah, well, first to backtrack, I thought I always wanted to be a Leaf, and then I became an Ottawa Senator, and then I wanted nothing to do with the Leafs. So, but then the move to Dallas definitely opened up the doors. And when I was presented to me by Kyle and Babs in the summer, it was something I jumped at because it is special. It's one thing to play in the NHL. What I'm learning is it's a special feeling to be part of an Original Six team. I love the game. I love the history. I love the challenge of potentially being part of a team that can bring us to, hockey respectability, where we're one of the top teams again and have a chance to win a cup here. Just the pressure that comes with that and the daily grind is what, really excites me. And I've really enjoyed it. It's been an eye-opener to just the intensity after being away for a few years in Dallas. And to be honest, I thrive on that, and it's kept me sharp and it's kept me motivated. And I've really enjoyed being a Toronto Maple Leaf.
Justin?
Jason, just looking back, from your rookie season to the NHL today, there's been a lot of technological advancements just in the way the game is presented to the players in terms of, I think Craig Berube yesterday called them tech packs or whatever you want to call the presentations to the team, iPads, all these different programs. What are some of the more profound changes in the way a team gets ready to play a hockey game in the NHL today from when you first broke into the league?
Well, I think, special teams, you can come up with a play and you have one crack at it before the whole league sees it. So there's not a whole lot of set plays being done. I think as a player, even as a young guy, I valued video. I think, to be consistent, you have to be a good self-evaluator in how you're playing. And I still, to this day, I have stacks of DVDs with my shift times marked on them, and I'd go home and watch them when I was younger just to try to figure out what I was doing right when I was playing good and what I was doing wrong when I wasn't. So I really enjoyed the video aspect. And I think also as a player in this time, and I think this is something maybe a lot of younger guys struggle with, is you have to be able to not take it so literal all the time, because sometimes it feels different than it looks on video. So there is a bit of an art to learning from video, but the coaches and everybody do a great job of putting together packages for you on what they want to work on. And I think it just helps you become a more well-rounded player, because they can really illustrate the weaknesses you have in your game and what you need to work on.
Well, believe it or not, in your career, at least one guy I know has switched from wooden sticks to composites.
Yeah, that's the wooden stick was, I'd still be using it if I could. So yeah. I still miss those babies. I got them in my garage, and I grab them every once in a while, think about how much better I pass the puck with them.
Imagine that, people listening to this. This guy used the wooden stick up until what, Jason? 4 years ago?
No, a little longer than that now. I was 2010 was the last year. 2010. Sherwood, 2010 was when I switched.
Okay.
Sherwood went.
Last holdout, though.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about playing with Daniel Alfredsson. He was a special player, wasn't he?
Daniel Alfredsson, special player, special person, competitive as hell. Just a guy that, you know, really made you work every day. We had a great relationship. You know, we had, you know, dinner together all the time, lots of banter back and forth, just a wide knowledge base of hockey and life, and just a really good guy to be around. And the way he practiced and played consistently, I think, was I benefit from just seeing that every day, and it made me push to make myself better. So, you know, especially looking back, I'm really thankful to have had a guy like that to be around.
And Jason, maybe we're talking to Jason Spezza of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Maybe Daniel Alfredsson was one of the mentors that helped your game evolve. You've been brought in that sense, a role on a very young Maple Leafs team. How have you been able to mentor some of the young stars, and knowing the pressures that they're facing? You are a very high draft pick, and you look around and you have the Austin Matthews, the Mitch Marners, William Nylanders with a lot of pressure on them. How have you been able to help mentor their game?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, some of the value that I have is that, you know, I was one of those top guys once upon a time, and I know the pressure that they go through. I know the competitiveness. You know, I wanted to be the best player in the league. I wanted to play on Team Canada's, and I know that that's how Matt is and Mitchie is and, you know, Willie and these guys. So I can relate to them, and I can relate to them when they get in a bit of a funk. And you just try to listen. And I think, you know, the best thing you can do is lead by example and to be an everyday presence and to see that, you know, show up with enthusiasm and then also just kind of be able to lean on them a little bit when – you know, they need it. So I've enjoyed working with high-end players like that. I think it's been a good fit, and I think I can relate to them.
Justin?
Just wondering what you're doing these days to try to stay ready. I guess no one really knows when the return is going to be, but I imagine you're making some effort at it. What are you able to do in these difficult times when we're all kind of confined to our places?
Yeah, I'm pretty lucky. I have a pretty good setup in my house. I got, you know, great resources with the Leaf trainers, and also I've trained with Andy O'Brien for years, so he's got me dialed in. I'll admit there's a bit of fear of being an older player and going through a time when you got to stay off the ice. I like to skate a lot, so yeah. I think I've been working like crazy, to be honest. I'm going to come through this probably in better shape and more ready to go, just because I've seen through lockouts and I've seen through stuff where, you know, guys kind of come back and they've lost a little bit of their game, and I'm going to do everything possible so that doesn't happen to me. So that's kind of my motivator right now. And I'm lucky that I have a good setup training-wise in my house to be able to continue. And there is a little bit of, and I've been running up and down the hills to the brickwork and doing some different stuff. And you get a little bit creative in these times, but I got good. I have good trainers that have been able to kind of set me on the right path.
Berkey?
Yeah, the brickworks, that's pretty good. It's pretty muddy there the last few days, though.
It is. It's good. There's no one around. There's some good hills, so it's been helpful for me.
Yeah, well, I'm up that way, too. I don't run the hills very often, though, to be honest with you, not anymore. Well, I think the notion that we're going to get back to it at some point, we all hope that. We're all hopeful of that. And I think there's a couple teams that desperately want to get back and see how this story ends, this season ends. And I think your team is one of them, because I think you're starting to play the right way despite the last road trip. I said this to Kyle yesterday. I sense that you're starting to figure out the second Pittsburgh game, the Tampa game, not you, Jason. I mean more the younger guys, how you have to play to win, the attention to detail, managing the game, and so on.
No, you're bang on. We're we're a hungry group, and I love that about our group. And there's been some highs and lows and in-betweens and frustration, and we would really love to see this year out because of that, I think. And we understand, though, that first and foremost, it's everybody's health and doing the right thing. And, you know, there's a lot more sacrifices going on than us playing hockey. But, you know, I am an optimist. I would love to see us get back. You know, we have a group chat going. Guys are trying to keep each other engaged and motivated, and it's easy because, like you said, we feel like we have a lot to prove as a group, and the year hasn't gone perfectly, but there is a lot of growth that's gone on in our team, and even internally that you guys don't see. Is there's more communication in the dressing room, there's more guys speaking their mind, there's more guys, you know, dragging guys into the fight and practice, and I think we're going in the right direction. And you're right, I'd love to see this play out, and I think we're growing as a group.
Jason, let me leave you with this. You've proven to be this year one of the best value players there is in the National Hockey League, a little bit shy of half a point a game, or a point every two games, in a limited amount of time on the ice. You're just 36 years of age. I know you're the elder statesman or one of them on the team, but you still have something left in the tank. Have you pursued starting conversations to see about, you know, extending this contract with the Leafs into another year?
No, we haven't, and you know, during the season, I didn't think there was any need to. It's you know, you played as I wanted to show value as a player. I do want to play again next year. I feel like I can really help this team out. I'm not in this to make money. I'm here to just play, and I want to be a part of the league. And like I said, I want to grow this to the point where we can win, and I want to be a part of it. So I hope they feel the same way, and I'd love to be back here again next year, but we'll just kind of wait and see. We're in a time right now where that stuff doesn't matter. We just got to solve what's being solved, and that stuff takes care of itself. But I'm motivated, and I don't feel like I'm done, and I feel like I got game left.
No, you've shown a lot of people you got lots left in the tank. Jason, listen, stay safe. Enjoy the time with your great daughters and your wife, and hopefully we'll get you back on the ice as soon as possible, which would be a lot of fun, especially for Leaf Nation, who are dying to see some Leafs hockey again. Thanks so much, Jason.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate having me on.
Yeah, there's Jason Spezza, Leafs forward, at home, like the rest of us, spending some quality time with his family and waiting this pandemic out. And he was, guys, real quickly before we cut to break, I mean, this guy was a valuable resource for the Leafs this year from a leadership standpoint, as well as a production standpoint. And clearly, maybe the demarcation for his season, you know, there was the Mike Babcock time where there was some struggles. He wasn't given the opportunity. And then there was the Sheldon Keefe time where he was really given a bigger role, and he seemed to excel in that position.
Yeah, I think he's been a value player for them. You can use him in every situation. He can win faceoffs. He's a quality person, obviously. We got him to laugh once. He's got that famous laugh. We got him to laugh once on the air. He's got that. If anyone knows what I'm talking about, go look on YouTube. You'll see all the examples of Jason Spezza laughing.
Yeah, no, that is there.
There is a really funny thing when you talk to professional athletes, and it's like, what are you doing to stay in shape? And it's like they're trying hard not to be like, you know, I'm rich, right? Like, I have a gym in my place. I really appreciate them not saying that directly. But it was also him funny being like, I'm not in it to make money. So good point by him.
You know, someone told me the other day, a lot of the Leafs are in condos downtown and don't have setups. Their gyms are closed. The strength coach dropped off bikes to some of them, and they are having trouble getting their setup.
Yeah, I know. I talked to Justin Hall. He said he just bought a Peloton, so maybe something.
Yeah, my wife did too. Our Peloton arrives on Saturday, so I'm interested to see what this is all about. But
all right, guys. I believe. Buy a Peloton.
There you go. So we've had Jason Spezza. We had Chris Pronger, a couple of great seasoned vets in the game. We're going to wrap things up with a little old-time hockey because it's a pretty big historic day for the National Hockey League. Details coming up on Hockey Central.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Back, Hockey Central, Brian Burke, Justin Bourne, David Amber, and yes, old-time hockey. What do you have?
And now, it's time for some old-time hockey.
His toe leg did clap already. Sure, those guys were the greats.
Yeah, sure, old-time hockey. Like it is sure.
Yeah.
Coach, our line starts.
There it is, April 1st. Lots happened on this day. We have about 5 minutes to wrap this up. Let's start with the final game back in 1919, the Stanley Cup Championship. It was actually canceled, what do you know, because of an epidemic of influenza sweeping America. It remains the only time in its history that the Stanley Cup was not awarded to a team. Interesting, so, fellas.
I wanted to talk about this because obviously we all do our part. We can make sure that that doesn't happen here. It doesn't need to happen if everyone does their part and follows the rules. So that's the reason I wanted to bring it up. It's the only time in the history. We haven't lived through this, people, in our lives. Mm-hmm. No one. There's a couple people on the planet who were alive when this happened, but they would have been infants at that time. And so this is new, 100-year-old news for us. It's a new territory for all of us. Let's get through it together.
Good message.
Well,
Justin.
Said. Well said.
Another piece of history. Oh, yeah. Go on, Justin.
Go ahead, D.A. Go ahead. Tee up the next one.
All right. Well, you're going to like this one. I know. Mike Bossy in 1978 became the first NHL rookie to score 50 goals. In fact, it was the first of nine straight 50-goal seasons for Mike Bossy. And the good news is I have 8 Mike Bossy rookie cards from that season. Justin.
All I know is when I talk to my dad about those Islander teams of old, he talks about Mike Bossy's shot and his release the way that we talk about a guy like Austin Matthews these days getting the puck off. He was doing it differently than players were at that time. And one of the things he talks about, and this by the way, this seems like a thing that was talked about more with older hockey players, but forearms. His forearm strength, those old wood sticks, he was able to get so much whip and torque, and what a goal scorer. 10 seasons, I think he was 50 plus goals every season, then just packed it in. Just an unbelievable career for Mike Bossy.
Yeah, the release. I remember watching him play. He scored that goal. That was the rookie year. It was my rookie year. Only heard of him a little bit more than you've heard of me. It was my only year. I was playing in the American Leagues. We're watching this all happen in real time, and I could not believe his release. The puck, it was a blur. The puck would get to a stick and it would be in the net. It was a blur. The only guy I've ever seen that's close to that is Brett Hull.
Yeah, and it's funny because when you talk about all-time great goal scorers in the National Hockey League, we talk about Alexander Ovechkin, you talk about Brett Hull. Mike Bossy has the highest goals per game in NHL history.
Yeah, he walked
700.
Away
Yeah, well, the back injury, right? 752 games, 573 goals. Think about that. He was scoring 0.762 goals per game. That's unbelievable. Best ever. That's how good he was.
It is. It's insane that you don't hear his name more brought up in those conversations. I guess there is longevity is, to the player's credit. I think that's something that a player can hang their hat on, being good for a long period of time. But over the span of his playing career, certainly as good as anyone ever.
And a few birthdays of note as well today, guys. Scott Stevens, 1964 was his birthday. So happy birthday to him. Jussi Jokinen.
He ruined a lot of people's birthdays.
he did. Again, it's funny. We talked about Chris Pronger and no one being like Chris Pronger. There's certainly no one in the league right now like Scott Stevens.
No, he's the guy played like an animal. He moved the puck. He was a good player on good teams, but he was feared. He was feared.
And it's funny because he's so soft-spoken off the ice, but man, that guy was an absolute animal when he played, and a multi-time cup winner as well. Pretty jam-packed 2 hours, guys. David Quinn, Chris Pronger, Jason Spezza, thank you for them for joining us here on Hockey Central. Tomorrow we're going to break down the Toronto Maple Leafs, review their season, and look ahead for what their off-season would look like as well. Some more great guests coming your way each and every day here on Hockey Central. Stay safe, stay inside, wash those hands. And we will see you tomorrow.